When her body was found near some train tracks at a tourist sightseeing spot, it appeared that she had been dragged behind a car before being thrown there. It would take more than 40 years of investigating before there would be a huge break in the case. This is the story of Shelley Connolly, the Alaska teenager whose murderer said his DNA was probably on her consensually. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. And Happy New Year to everyone, and thank you for being here as always. More than 40 years ago, 16-year-old Shelley Connolly went missing in Anchorage, Alaska. The spunky teenager loved sleepovers, walking her little brother home from the bus stop, and camping and fishing like any good Alaskan. Her mom told the Anchorage Daily News that Shelley didn't seem to realize how pretty she was. She had dropped out of high school with dreams of becoming a cosmetologist and was about to start cosmetology school. On January 6, 1978, Shelley told her mom she was going roller skating, but she was actually seen at an iconic bar called Chilcoot Charlie's, Coots for short. Its big claim to fame is that Playboy magazine once named it one of the best bars in America. Not to get too in the weeds here, but I have to tell you how it got its name. Chilcoot Trail was one of the major access routes to the Yukon for gold miners in the 1800s. Chilcoot Charlie was a tall tale kind of character created by an Alaskan storyteller back in 1951 and made famous on the author's weekday radio show. During gold rush times, the Canadian Mounted Police insisted that anyone crossing Chilcoot Pass on the hunt for treasure must have a year's supply of provisions with them for safety. So the miners would always bring a sack of flour and a pot for making sourdough bread with them. Still today, a sourdough is a nickname for someone who's lived in Alaska for a long time. So when a restaurateur wanted to open a bar in 1970s Anchorage that encompassed Alaska culture, he chose the name Chilcoot Charlie's. In interviews after the bar became famous, the owner said the character of Chilcoot Charlie was a sourdough reprobate. So the entire reason I told you the story behind this bar's name was to be able to quote someone using a word I always say in the opening of my videos, reprobate, out in the wild. Thank you for allowing me this ridiculous tangent. So anyway, Shelley Connolly left Chilcoot Charlie's bar in the early morning hours of January 7th, 1978, and then she simply vanished into the night. There was a dusting of snow on the ground that evening, and at about 15 degrees, it wasn't the kind of night to be outside who knows where in the last frontier. Hours went by, and then Shelley's body was spotted beside Seward Highway. A couple of hikers had stopped to take photos of the landscape around Beluga Point when they saw her 15 feet below them near the railroad tracks. She was dressed only in her light sleeveless shirt and jeans. The new ski jacket she got for Christmas and her shoes were missing. Shelley had been assaulted, and of course she had suffered from hypothermia, but her real cause of death was internal bleeding. Her organs had been lacerated from a blunt force. She had seemingly been dragged behind a car and then tossed by the side of the highway. Her mom told the Anchorage Daily News that her murderer or murderers tried to throw her from the car, but her hand got stuck in the door. So they had to stop and push her out completely, over the side of the road toward the train tracks below. From the state of Shelley's fingernails and the dirt underneath them, it looked like she had been trying to crawl up the embankment by the road when she died. And that checks out with the little I've been able to gather about Shelley all these years later. Her mom called her a typical teen in 1978, the normal kind of girl who liked to break the rules just a little. At 16, she was already engaged to an older guy in the military who was on duty at the Army base at the time Shelley was murdered. Her parents didn't seem to notice she was missing until the news of the body came out in the local media, so she must have been very independent at that young age. I'm not surprised to learn that she also evidently fought for her life that night. Biological evidence was found under Shelley's fingernails, but DNA testing was still nearly a decade away. Witnesses had seen Shelley leaving the bar with three men, but all they had was a description, no names or direction or anything. Shelley's stepsister told authorities she watched Shelley talk to three young men around 1 a.m., and the stepsister's boyfriend corroborated her description of them. A bouncer said Shelley then left shortly before 2:30 a.m. with those three men in a small, dark sedan. He said she was often there and was known by the other regulars as Snow. Ah, the good old days when a 16-year-old could get regularly served at a bar. According to Alaska's news source, Shelley's murder didn't get the attention it deserved at the time. Drawings of the suspects made the local paper, but they were buried behind bigger stories. Shelley never made the front page. Her name was even spelled wrong in the articles that did exist. According to the Daily Sitka Sentinel at the time, Alaska's assault rate was second worst in the nation and 75% higher than the national average, so her story may have gotten lost amidst the other unsolved cases. Those three men Shelley was seen leaving the bar with were never found, and the case went cold. Investigators continued to work it, though, on and off for almost 20 years as different persons of interest were questioned, but there was just never the evidence they needed. Shelley's mom and sister made sure she was never forgotten, though. And shortly after Shelley's death, her mom founded the Alaska chapter of Parents of Murdered Children. Alaska state troopers did have a break in the case in the 1990s, when the DNA from the assault was analyzed and potential matches were found. But when those suspected men were interviewed, the DNA wasn't from any of them. Alaska Citizens for Justice offered a $20,000 reward for information in 2011, but no one came forward. By 2015, the lead investigators said their clues had all dried up and they needed to get lucky with the DNA or with someone who knew something and finally felt too guilty to hold it in any longer. To make matters worse, the Alaska Bureau of Investigation's cold case unit was about to be dissolved due to budget cuts. Shelley's mom told the Anchorage Daily News that there was pretty much no more hope. She lamented that a mother is always supposed to be there to protect her children. She said about the killer, "I've come to the conclusion that in my lifetime, I'm sure I won't know. Hopefully my family will find closure, and I guess when I leave this old world, then there will be an answer." In May 2018, though, just as genetic genealogy was having its major moment in the spotlight thanks to the arrest of the Golden State Killer, the Alaska State Trooper's cold case investigator read an article about it. He had DNA recovered from Shelley's fingernails and jeans submitted to the company mentioned in the article, Parabon Nanolabs. 6 months later, Parabon had built a family tree that began in 1858 in Ireland. From there, they found three potential matches for the person who left that DNA behind, all brothers. But only the youngest of them made sense in terms of the timeline and description. He had never been on investigators' radar before. The man had moved to Alaska with his mom in 1971 from Seattle and worked as an unskilled laborer after dropping out of high school. In 1978, when Shelley was killed, he was 21 years old and out on probation after spending time in jail for theft, burglary, and a firearms charge. He also drove a car that sounded like the one Shelley had left the bar in, and he had looked suspiciously like the man who had been driving it that night. He also had a scar on his cheek, the same kind of scar Shelley's friends had mentioned in their description to police of one of the men Shelley was talking to on the night of her death. A few weeks after Shelley's murder, this man asked his probation officer if he could move out of town. Now in 2019, authorities tailed him for all of 1 hour before they were able to collect some cigarette butts that he dropped outside of a strip mall deli. Those cigarette butts were covered in DNA that exactly matched the DNA they were looking for. 62-year-old Donald Francis McQuaid had left Alaska in the early 2000s and was now living in Oregon with his brother and stage 4 liver cancer. From what I can gather on Facebook, McQuaid loved his wife, his grandchildren, and the Beatles. Seeing his overwhelmingly nice and positive Facebook post wishing everyone a happy Mother's Day and being excited about the arrival of his grandson and quoting lyrics from his favorite rock songs and thanking our servicemen and women and asking people to donate to the Shriners Children's Hospital, it reminded me of a quote from the famed social justice lawyer Brian Stevenson, whom I was lucky to hear speak a few years ago. In his book Just Mercy, he says, "Each of us is more than the worst thing we've ever done." It's weird how someone who looked like a good suspect in a murder case could also be, you know, human. Investigators called McQuaid up and asked if he knew Shelley Connolly, and he said no, he'd never spent time with her, and he certainly didn't murder her. But when they brought him into the Gresham, Oregon police station 2 days later, he said that, all right, he may have had sex with her in 1978, but it's not like he can remember everyone he's had sex with, geez. A roommate of McQuaid's from 1978 called him that day, secretly with Alaska investigators listening in. McQuaid told the friend that he didn't remember having intercourse with Shelley and that, hey, he would be under arrest if there was really any DNA linking him to her. But McQuaid's brother told the Oregonian that there's a lot Donald doesn't remember from that time because he had issues with alcohol back in the day. Donald McQuaid admits to having gotten too drunk at times and making mistakes, and he has domestic violence and stalking charges in his past. But his brother says that doesn't mean he's a murderer. He said Donald was distraught at trying to remember what might have happened in 1978. He believed his brother was innocent. He said that with Donald's stage 4 liver cancer about to take his life, He had no reason not to admit to the crime if he was guilty. His brother pointed out that there were two other people to look at in the three people Shelley was allegedly seen at the bar with before her death, and he felt the police were just discounting them completely in an effort to close the case quickly. He told the Oregonian, "We don't believe they've solved the case, and we feel very bad for Shelley's mother. She deserves resolution." Shelley's mother, for her part, said she thought she'd never be alive to see this day come. McQuaid was arrested on August 30th, 2019, and charged with first and second degree murder. Shelley Connolly would have been 57 years old at the time had she lived.
What I'm about to tell you has some significant relevance on a case that we feared would never be solved. More than a decade before I donned this uniform and joined the Alaska State Troopers, a young woman by the name of Shelley Connolly was left on the side of the Seward Highway for dead. That was in January of 1978. I was only a freshman at Diamond High School at the time. This past Friday, 62-year-old Donald F. McQuaid was taken into custody in Grisham, Oregon, and charged with murder in the first degree and murder in the second degree for the death of Shelley.
COVID-19 delayed his trial and left him out in the world on bail, but in December 2023, 67-year-old Donald McQuaid went to court. His public defender argued that McQuaid was never considered a suspect before, and there are two potential people of interest who have never been ruled out. He said that DNA doesn't answer most of the important questions in this case, and that there's a chance McQuaid had consensual intercourse with Shelley, unrelated to her murder.
The state says DNA evidence collected at the time linked the crime to this man, 67-year-old Donald McQuaid, who was 21 and living in Anchorage at the time of Shelley's death. But McQuaid's attorneys argued the evidence didn't prove who killed her.
Don McQuaid didn't rape Shelley Connolly. Don McQuaid did not murder Shelley Connolly. At best, the state's evidence shows that these two people might have had sex in the day or two before she died.
But the prosecutor was able to make too strong a case for McQuaid. Alaska Public Media reports that the assistant attorney general argued, "Obviously, Shelley can't come here today to tell you what happened to her on January 7th, 1978, but the evidence from her body tells us how she died. Her body shows us the wounds that were inflicted on her. Her body tells us how long she lived after she received those wounds. Her body tells us who inflicted them and how." Shelley's mom, Judy, died in August 2021 before she was able to see Donald McQuaid go to court. But she would love to know that the jury only needed about 2 hours to decide McQuaid's fate. He was convicted on all counts of the murder of Shelley Connolly. Sentencing will be in April 2024, although McQuaid's lawyers plan to appeal. We'll see if his stage 4 liver cancer allows him to make it that long. With the case finally closed, the Alaska State Troopers investigator who worked on it for years told KTUU, "It was very exciting to be a part of this, you know, and I just happened to be at the right place at the right time when this technique came along. It's quite a game changer." Investigators have spent years analyzing this case looking for a viable lead. I have an overwhelming feeling of satisfaction that all that work has paid off. More than anything, I'm relieved to be able to provide Shelley's friends and family a sense of justice and the knowledge that Shelley was more than a name on an unsolved homicide sitting in a filing cabinet somewhere. Every single victim matters to us. So what do you think? Are the scar and the car and the DNA evidence enough for you to convict McQuaid? How much weight do you put on his past domestic violence and stalking charges? What about those other two men Shelley seemingly left the bar with that night? Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.